Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to another Rahulastawa Book Club. I am so excited to be joined by the legendary Helen Lederer, who has written a fantastic memoir called Not That I'm Bitter. Hello, Helen.
This is an honour to be in this highbrow version of your exchange with others. It's lovely.
It's good. Well, you know, it sometimes is highbrow, but it's fun on the book club. But, you know, it's fun to have people who aren't highbrow as well. So I have a lot of academics and people, Helen, and, you know, I have to behave, whereas I don't think I'm going to have to behave with you.
No, you don't. It's important that we connect because we have met at the Battersea Arts Centre, and if people have done that in the bar, then there's a bond, so we don't have to pretend too much, do we?
That's true. I also met you, you won't remember this, I met you in 1987 outside the Fringe box office when in my first Edinburgh. I was very excited to meet you. I was a big Young Ones fan and an alternative comedy fan. So I knew quite a lot about you, and I embarrassingly, you were gave me short shrift.
Was I nice?
You were okay. I think you were a bit bedazzled. You weren't nasty. I was embarrassing because I was a student, and I gave you my leaflet, and I did that thing of saying, if you come to see my show, I'll come and see your show, which I don't think you were quite in need of an audience as
God.
I was.
So that was at the box office. Yeah. Maybe you were a bit grubby. Look, maybe because of being a student, there was, you know, you weren't shining, but also maybe I just read a review of myself. Do you know what I mean? Remember when, you know, I was going through my own trauma.
But well, exactly, yeah.
87, and that was your first one. Wow.
That was my first Edinburgh, yeah, and obviously you've been doing it for a little while by then, but yeah, so I was very excited to meet you, and I remember it, so, you know, but I think you...
That's something.
I mean, you weren't rude, but you were, you know, but I also thought...
I didn't ask you out.
You didn't ask me out. Having read your book, you know, I wish I'd ask you different questions.
No, but this is awful now about the book, because people are saying, Richard, this is why I need to talk to you, get your take on it, because I have written, because I am alarmingly honest, and that's
very
just
much so.
Who I am.
Yes.
I didn't know how else to write the memoir, but now it's out. And the questions people, they have that face. I had to do an interview with a man from the Radio Times, and he'd had that look on his face when our faces met on a Zoom. And he said, well, I feel I really know you. And there was a kind of, you're E-E-W. But I didn't know how else. But the questions are quite strict, whereas I think I'm representing a truth of 1980-1990 times.
I think you really are. I think what I love about this book is it's, I don't think I've read an autobiography in which the author is so authentically on the page. I think there's right. there's no artifice to it. And I think sometimes you're wrong about yourself and and sometimes you're too hard on yourself. But I think it's so honest. And, you draw a curtain and a veil over certain incidents, but then other incidents yes. you're very honest about. But it's what an autobiography should be. And more interest. I think this is something, that when you have someone sort of, this sounds rude, but someone from sort of the middle, which I actually take as a big compliment. I think the best thing you can do in your career is stay, stay working yes. your whole life and have some successes and have some failures, but basically, carry on.
Oh, yes, I've never been up.
I think you've been up.
But
I think, I think, someone who's been, can experience both directions. So, you know the lows and the highs. Reading an autobiography of someone who's had nothing but success. Reading Peter Kay's autobiography, I feel, is
so... Well, not so,
but it's boring. It's boring because he's never had... Well, he claims to have never had any failures. Whereas you want to read about the failures, but also you have had some big successes as well. So,
But I'm not a complacent person. I don't sort of see... I don't experience success. I mean, I don't even stay on stage on those occasions where people have clapped, maybe just to get me off and get the next person on. I mean, I don't kind of bask in it. When people say, oh, but you must love the applause. You go, no, not really at the end, because you're just thinking of the next thing. I don't know. I think that is a genuine, I think I just had to find a way of making the stuff on the page funny. So I'm bloody pleased that you, of all people, actually got that. Yes. But now I am being required to be like the oracle of, moral compass of, of behaviours. When I don't think the behaviours were too remarkable, and I think other people, I don't have five heads or anything. Nothing. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's the honesty of it, Helen, that's remarkable. I mean, I think it's a very funny book. It's a very sad book as well, because I think I think it's very authentically a comedian's book, right? I identify with a lot of it. I think a lot of comedians have that mixture of confidence, self-confidence, but also shame and doubt, and also envy, which you're very you're very open about, and not ever being, I think it's a thing I've noticed with comedians. I think I've reached a place where I don't feel it quite as badly anymore, but comedians are always looking at the next person up and thinking,
yes,
when am I going to get that? And you have to withdraw from that race.
Absolutely.
You have to point. Otherwise, however successful you are, you'll never be the most successful. Yeah, it will kill you. Yeah,
it will just make you a very dark person. And I do say that, in the sort of dark and the sort of mentally dark. And I did sulk for a bit. But it's only for quite a few years, and then sort of say, has Miranda retired there yet? Asking for a friend. No, I mean, but that was a good gag, because in the sense, only if other people know it's a position we're all in. Yeah. But even people currently in the government, however, they're looking. We all look. And then what do you think about the pretentious word schadenfreude, which I have to get in? So then you just go, there is that. I mean, just because it's a German word, we think it's like highly significant, but it is, because there is that in all of us when somebody's had it all and they go, oh. But then when you get to this age, autumn of life, I actually just want to have the love. Like, you just have to have the love with the audience, the love of the people I'm meeting in the towns. What is the point of hating and being negative now? Yeah. I really don't want to experience that. I think it's so derailing.
Yeah. And it isn't a bitter book. I think it's an honest book. It's on. So, not that I'm bitter, and I don't think you are bitter. But I think it's interesting because, as a performer, you have success and not success, and it's not all, it's not down to you, and it's you try and analyze. I've had the same. I obviously had my own TV show in the 90s, and then suddenly you fall out of favor, and you go, did I do something?
Yes.
Did I not do something?
And often,
I think often
what's
it's not. I don't know, because you can never quite know yourself, right? So you never know whether you've done something wrong or not, or whether it's just things move on, or whether just people have slightly forgotten about you, or just someone else comes along. And I think a lot of it's just luck, right? So, I mean, I think it's very, you know, both of us have worked in teams with people who've gone on to be just stratospherically successful. So one of my first Edinburgh shows was with Steve Coogan. You know, I obviously worked with Armando Iannucci, Chris Morris, all those people. They've all gone on
Were you doing were you with them?
Well, we did a show called On the Hour. I wrote for the On the Hour, which was the sort of thing that broke all of that group. And then me and Stu and Patrick Marber, Simon Munnery and Steve Coogan did a sketch show in Edinburgh. That's about 91, 92, somewhere around there.
All together.
So yeah, it didn't work. It didn't really work out because there was too many egos. It didn't really work out. It nearly worked out. It didn't work out. It's one of those things. Like towards the end, a producer came who really got into it, and suddenly everyone was, maybe we should do this. But that's the way. You know, there's just this luck, isn't there? There's about if that guy had come at the beginning of the run, and said I wanted to put you on TV, that might have become a sketch show, and that might have, might have been good.
Do you think there's only room? I mean, because I happen to be a woman, I'm asked, you know, I'm having to frame this in terms of there were only a certain amount of women allowed. But I still blame myself because I did 5 years of stand-up on my own, having started in a double act. But then I kind of think if only I had pushed that more. But then I got, you know, given a job at BBC Radio, and then people are nicer to you. Did you notice that? The moment you say I'm BBC, and then you just go on stage in the Paris studio it was, and people would just be smiling already, even before you got on stage. And you drop a script by accident, and they'd laugh. Like you did it on purpose, like it was hilarious. You don't have to do any work without taking those people for granted. It was just another vibe.
Yeah.
And then I think I really admire, Jenny Eclair, who has it in her bones to, you know, it's like rolling up the sleeves and getting dirty and doing it year after year. Yeah. I sort of blame myself for not wanting that more.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, I think that's understandable. Again, similar for me, I kind of did a bit of stand-up and then we got radio and I didn't do stand-up for a while. And it's, you know, because you're doing something else. I think this book also, you know, and the sadness of it for me underneath the, again, what is a very funny book and a very positive book, but it does make me sad because I think as a woman, you know, through the 80s and 90s and noughties, working in entertainment, you're definitely, you know, had a lot more barriers in the way. It was very much like we're only allowed to have one woman. And it's, you know, and you also have to put up with this shit with sexual harassment.
But is it? Because I'm questioning that, Richard, as well now, because just because when I did the first sort of syndicate interview, this woman just said, and do you feel any shame? And that was her first question. And I hadn't until she mentioned it. Then the Guardian person said, and do you feel angry? I was not until we brought it up. And so it is having, surely, I'm just want to get your take on this, that if we were younger, although mind you, I went to drama school late. I did everything late. I was 27. That's old. That's old to start. I was in my 30s. But, you know, nobody's married. Nobody's got children. You know, it's that time in your life. Often people choose to have connections with others.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is whatever those connections, whatever forms they take. And it seems as if that has kind of like just speaking about that, not in a boastful way, or I think a very respectful way, seems to have kind of upset certain interviewers. Or maybe it was the massage parlour thing.
Well, there's that. We may talk about that. But yeah, I think there's double standards again with that because, you know, if as a man, no one would. I mean, you might get a little bit of pull back. Yeah, absolutely. You know, everyone was doing the same thing.
Yeah,
no, it's all it's, with the relationships. It's all, you know, a willing thing. So that's fine. You know, so a consenting thing. I think it's, you know, and you banged the best ones. So, you know, so well done. But
so you did very well. And so that is interesting. And then you go, well, being in the middle, and you're absolutely right, middle, just keeping going. Obviously, until this memoir, I, deeply respectful of others, would be very careful with a journalist. You know, just say nice things, most of which I mean, but I would, you know, I'd like be in a witness box. You know, I'd be a very good witness for someone because I know not to say anything and to protect others as well as myself, you know. But then I just thought, well, if I don't put those things in for colour, for scene setting, for context, then who am I protecting? I just think it was, I just had to put it in, and now I'm kind of squirming a bit because the genie is out of the bottle.
I don't think you should be squirming. I don't think anyone who's judging you, that's, you know, they should be judging themselves. And I think you're, you know, I actually think you, you know, you don't go into any details. You just, you know, you're, I think you're very respectful about all of that sort of stuff,
Ben Elton was lovely about the book.
Yes.
To have an amusing encounter with someone in a Renault 4 when the thing, that gear stick thing, you know, you don't have to, I think that's, if he had said, oh my God, the Renault 4, can't put the Renault, but no, because we're old and it's okay. And we're all, you know, just a nice little encounter.
Yeah, and you know, and people, I'm fascinated. I mean, to me, that part of the book, the stuff about the 80s comedy, for me, that's the, you know, the bit that I want to know about. I want to know all about Rick Mayall and Harry Enfield and everything and yourself and how all that kind of came together. So I love all that stuff anyway. And, you know, and I think it also, because it speaks so much of you, there's a sort of naivety to you, but also a sort of, you know, desire to please,
and that gets you into trouble, I suppose. But again, it's interesting that you and I both are sort of reflecting on what is success, how we feel. I think I would say that I've enabled the elite to remain elite. I mean, you know, because the elite have remained on top. I don't think the elite have changed, and the elites tend to kind of move amongst themselves because sociologically that makes sense. I mean, famous people, like I'd be a sort of Graham Norton radio person, but I wouldn't be a Graham Norton sofa person. Have you been a Graham Norton sofa person?
I don't think I've even done his radio. So no, well, I think we're, you know, I would put you, you know, ahead of me in the middle. You've done like
sofa. I don't think we're sofa.
We're not definitely sofa.
We're not so far. Well, no, I'm not, but I can totally see that you would be. But, you know, I wouldn't do the Miriam Margulies and suddenly just sort of, you know, the very out there story that she can pluck from a tree. and also there's that thing about when I'm with famous people, I put this in the book, it's just that thing that I don't behave normally. I was a bit nervous about even meeting you because I put you on a pedestal. I was really keen to do this podcast. And I go, oh, am I screwing it up now? Because, you know, like, or you speak in a different way, or I'm less funny. I kind of just become less funny, or I speak in a slightly affected manner. You know that thing? But I haven't. But then because I knew, like I met Dawn, who's probably the most famous person who I like very much, but I met her on a job. So when you meet someone on a job, there's the joy. Got on a train, off we went up to do Happy Families that Ben Elton wrote. Yeah. So it was all in there. They suddenly started to be nice to me when they saw that I could do a thing, that I could do it. They all went on to have series. I didn't. But that's quite funny in itself. I think that is quite funny. Was it Zelig? What's that thing? I was just there. I was just there thinking I could do my own thing. Holy Grail being getting my own sitcom, which you've got, Richard. And then I didn't get it. And so that could have been because it was rubbish or I didn't write enough scenes. And then I remember going to see John Plowman, the oracle of all power, who championed the women, and said, I thought it was I had a political thing called Party Girl, thought it'd be great, New Labour, you know, something that has substance, which is interesting, isn't it, to have substance, not just, silly me, which I fear that would be a side that people might perceive, understandably. And then he said, oh, no, no, because Dawn French, you know. So that they would have, and that never happened. I never even saw the script. But you'd know that this was how it was. You wouldn't be cross. This is people saying, are you cross? Wasn't cross because you go, that's the climate. You have to just accept the pecking order. How can we change? How can an individual change the pecking order? But you think, you know, how can we? Have we?
I think, but I think, you know, you have, you and Jenny and Joe and you know, the few women who were managed to battle through all of this, you know, and French and Saunders, obviously, as well. But now, you know, I think that the landscape has changed, not completely, for female comedians and writers. You know, and it feels to me, you know, you're clearly, you know, you're a unique person. You've got a very interesting comic vision. You've got an interesting...
I mean, I've heard that said. I think more people describe women comedy. Now, this is not to be... I want to notate as eccentric, because that's a way of explaining women in comedy, like Joyce Grenfell was maybe eccentric. But what does unique... May you explain? Because I'm getting free therapy.
I think you've just got to... You know, you've got... I think with comedic comedy and with getting onto TV, you want someone, hopefully, who's going to do something different than everyone else. I think if you had been given your own show, let's not give up hope, Helen. There's still time.
No,
but if you are given your own show, I think, you know, you're writing, you've written novels, you've written, you know, you've acted, you've done, you know, you've done everything. I think there's so much luck in it. And I think it's sort of interesting. You're very honest in this book about not knowing how to go about how pushy to be. And I think sometimes you're much pushier than I would never have gone up to Bill Dare at a party and gone, when are you going to put me in this show?
I'm so glad. You see, I love this conversation because it means that the texture, you know, those details landed for you. Because let's just remember, those BBC light entertainment parties held on the stage in the whatever theatre, and you only get invited if you've been lucky enough to be in a comedy that year. Already, you know, your entry into it is, whoa, very slim. And then I can actually picture being on the side of the stage and going, I've got to get a job. This is it. Not even, just knowing that this is your moment. It's like when you're much younger, when I was about 15, I would go to a party in Eltham in the suburbs and go, I want to get off for someone. I know that sounds awful, but just a small getting off, and nothing serious, not on the scale in the book. But you set your intention, right? So I remember going, yes, as you say, I went Bill Dare, reefer blazer, gold things, just making that up, maybe not reefer, but anyway, and then genuinely asking him, I wonder if he'd seen anything I'd sent in. Asking him what he thought of me. That was a mad moment, and it was true. I actually did. You know when you're going into slightly abnormal territory, but I just do sometimes because it's all about a job. It's all about that moment and the wine, and there won't be another Christmas party ever. You know what I mean? That I'll be asked to. And then he said, high maintenance. But it wasn't a criticism. I think it was quite a gentle, benign, genuine reaction.
It's sort of a jokey reaction from him. But again, I think possibly had you been a man doing it, that there would have been a different response as well. But, you know, and there's plenty of high maintenance people working in show business. And I think, you know, I just think that it does, you know, it's just that I think this element of luck, there's a lot of very skilled people out there. There's a lot of luck. I think you also had to face up against this, the sexism within the industry and, you know, even, and I think like a lot of it was the 80s and everyone was meant to be right on and feminist, but it was
it's very complicated. Because when, and you being in a double act, and I don't know if you remember us, the late Maggie Fox, I met her at a TIE audition for Ipswich. Neither of us got in, obviously, but I stole her from another double act partner, the part of lip service. And I had her, we were together for 9 months. And then I love, you know, just being with someone else and sharing the terror and the joys. That was a joyous time, but it had to end. Also, I think I was seen as ambitious because I was buying the stage and looking for adverts and phoning people up. Literally phoning producers up. Hi, it's Helen and Maggie Fox here. But that would be normal, but I wasn't a confident person, but that was a joy. And then what was I saying there, Richard? I was thinking then you go solo and you're saying about luck, aren't you? Is that what you're saying?
I just think that, you know, I think there's a lot of talented people who don't get as many breaks as you and I have had and don't get there. And I think that there is an element of luck in just getting through to that stage where you're doing your own thing and everyone likes it.
And then you run with it and then you get better at it. But I was just remembering the moment that I said, can she remember anything? And she emailed me and just said that when we were doing pentameters in Hampstead, because we did that regularly, that we would end up buying everyone drinks. And then they would all very genuinely criticize us because they thought it might be helpful. And we just took it. We laugh at that. I mean, it was we wanted to do it. You know, we would drive around and go to the gigs. I do remember, do you remember wanting to do it a lot?
Yeah, I know, definitely.
Remember that passion.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. You know, I think you definitely, you know, you need that drive. You need the ambition. Everyone's also insecure and thinks they're an imposter. Yeah. And, you know, and so everyone's got, you know, being, I think it's, that's what makes me sad about this book, is that just I think it's so easy for people to take advantage of people in that position because they're both outgoing and insular and you know, they want something. And so if there is a bad person, they can take advantage of, especially, and I think especially women, but also with men. It does happen with men as well.
Yes,
and, you know, in different ways. But I think, you know, it does, I think all the, you know, there's a lot of, again, moving stuff about wanting to lose weight and not unfit. You know, you still are such a beautiful woman. You are such a beautiful woman. And it makes me cross that, you know, you were spending all that time feeling that insecure about yourself and putting yourself through all this stuff again, which I don't, it happens to a degree for men, but it obviously happens much more for women.
It is odd. But then you see, again, with the narrative, and you'd get this, I just think it's so, like when I talk about the powdered food diet, let's say, I mean, that, like going into a safe house in Norwood where, you know, then you get your CBT techniques, like how to deal with a buffet table. And somebody said, just leave the room, which I wouldn't have thought of. But, you know, but there I was, but totally urgently engaging in the program and meeting new people. So that's interesting. There's sadness about that one would need to. But I just think there's some hysteria. I just wanted to capture the hysteria of the things I've done. I'm aware that there is more at stake when you talk about it, because one's got to be mindful of how things are now. And even I noticed with the Trump thing and the woman, whatever she was called, now it's modern to say, oh no, I consented, I was not a victim. So, you know, it's like language is all very, you know, I'm very respectful of language and how people are now, but also I think being of this age, I went out and said, I bloody said it now. I've let it out.
Expressing your love can look many different ways. And with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
But it's, you know, I think it's important to the honesty of is what's refreshing about it. It's what's important about it. I think, you know, I think comedy and unpleasantness and sadness go hand in hand. So there are, you know, it is, you know, the things you went through are both sad and ridiculous and funny and also make you feel a bit upset. And that's what, that's the heart of comedy. I just feel, you know, I feel sad that, that you had to go through it and that I, you know, you and lots of other people maybe haven't had the full recognition they deserve, or you think about what, you know, you think about an individual comedian, you might think, what would have happened if they had got their break and if they'd got to do this thing?
Well, that's it. That's what I was going to ask you, exactly that, Richard. I mean, what do we feel would be an agreeable end game, an agreeable goal, given that our adventures and our this and our, you know, we've done a bit of this, we've done a bit of that, and there are only a few people at the top. Some are very, very good. Some are less good. But what would have been, what is our completion? You know?
Well, it's a good question. I think as time goes by, that changes. And, you know, certainly the ambitions I had as a 20-year-old, you know, I'm pretty glad I didn't fulfill them. Although, you know, and you get your own level of success. There's a great show, I don't know if you've seen it, called Girls Five Ever, which is, you've got to watch it. You'll love it. It's like a sort of Spice Girls band reforming as middle-aged women, and Tina Fey's involved with it.
But
third series, there's, what's his name? There's an actor called Richard Kind, who they come across, who's in everything. Again, you wouldn't necessarily know his name, but if you saw him, you'd know his face. And they do a big thing about how, you know, he's just constantly working. And he says you never get above number five on the list of actors. Never be number five. And I think there's something to be said for always being in that, being aiming for the middle and hitting the middle and staying in the middle. Because so, you know, I think both of us may be fortunate. And again, I think if you were Dawn French, if you were at that level. I don't think, even though I love her books and she's written a very funny show that is quite honest about some of her mortifying moments, it's not anywhere in the same as this book. I'm sure she's got moments like this book, but you can write about it.
She can't. She wouldn't be allowed to.
No, exactly.
And why would the famous people go there? So it's not to say it's sanitized. I mean, it's very accessible because we all identify with showbiz, because that's what we all identify with, those iconic comedy programs. So it's a currency we completely identify with. So the disasters framed in from there are totally immediate and joyous for us to recognize. Yeah, mine are a little bit strange, maybe, risk-taking. And I was thinking, you're talking about the Tina Fey thing, so I'm jealous. There's a little bit of jealousy came out, because you go, they're a group, they're American, they get the backing. Did you see the Steve Martin documentary? I haven't seen the second half.
No, I haven't seen it yet, no.
But that's really interesting, looking at a guy who sort of started like as a concept, like really weird. When you look back at how stand-up material can date, like I wanted to look at the clips of me doing, you know, really early stand-up, and you go, what was I talking about? Sunbeds, self-help tapes, oh my God. But Steve Martin, I was thinking, that's not necessarily funny, but he was like a concept. He stayed with his in his lane, and then he took the audience out with him on the street, and he was just became such a big phenomenon. I think it was almost too much to bear, like, you know, one person, or like with Rick at the very beginning, you know, one person sort of driving the style and the fashion, you know, Kevin Turvey, there's only one. And the same with Steve Martin. It's quite interesting. So we return to our middle lane.
Yeah.
But it's not inferior, because the star, we're all needed. We're all needed, and we can all connect in some way. I think maybe if I did it again, I would leave some of the detail out, but that is who I am. And the publisher said, and it's difficult to get a publisher as well.
Yeah.
So when they said, do not leave anything out, because I thought, I'll just put it in. I'll just put it all down. And they'll say, well, maybe not that. They went, no, you've got to keep it all in. So yeah. I did what I was told, because I'm a people pleaser.
Good. And I think it's the right decision. You know, and again, I think this, it's a book you could, it defines, you know, the two or three decades eras that we've been through. So you get the alternative comedy, you get, you know, obviously the big success of being in Absolutely Fabulous Naked Video and all those things, but then also be, you know, having to then, you know, go with the flow reality. and do all these reality TV things, which I think is, again, will probably be very much of it. If you're a TV historian, this book I think would be incredibly useful, because it'd be very much of its time. But, you know, again, it's I love the way you've embraced doing those shows, and I think you're great on those shows. But equally, it feels like, why have you got this amazing writer entertainer doing this sort of reality thing rather than the radio?
Would you have done Big Brother?
If you could
buy a lot of garden furniture or whatever, a shed, if you then had the money to do what you wanted?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you have to make those choices. And I think, I've sort of been fortunate in that I've always worked on something I want to do. And I've nearly always been paid for it, and enough to that I haven't often. Every now and again, I've had to take a job for the money.
But Richard, maybe you wanted to do it just to fear of missing out, because I don't look back and why did I do it? But I met a kind of very strange, different kind of agent who said, right, people like you, but they don't know you. What you need to do is write a memoir, do a show and a reality series. And this was a very influential. And I thought, I'm now walking around in other people's shoes. You know, people like you go on Loose Women, and you're just a different world. But I mean, normally I kind of think it's important to be able to straddle different worlds. I mean, because that's makes life interesting. But yeah, but that's interesting, your reply. Yeah, because I'm thinking of our mutual friend, John Hegley, you know, who we love. Obviously, Now, he's a person who knows what they wouldn't do, really is clear about what they wouldn't do. So you do feel a bit, I don't know who I am. I'm kind of a bit of this and I'm a bit of that. Maybe that's all right. But those people, as you say, the TV historians will read that diary of the Big Brother and the acute exposure. But also it's the social jostling that you and I do at event. You know, it's social jostling all the time. It's hilarious.
And it is part of it. And people, you know, it works for some people. It works like big time. And some people it doesn't. Some people it destroys their career. Yeah, I mean, I think you and Jenny, you know, both you and Jenny Eclair, and obviously you came through the same thing. And I think neither of you have really had the adulation you deserve.
No.
But for both of you, you've gone into doing those things, both the same things. She did the diving as well, didn't she? You did the diving program.
She did the jungle.
You did the Big Brother. You know, it has worked for her in terms of helping to get the audience that she deserves. So I'm not snobby about it. I've done Taskmaster, which is quite different.
I would love to be on Taskmaster.
Yeah, you'd be good on Taskmaster.
I don't watch the programs that I'm not in, so obviously I don't watch a lot of TV. I mean, watching comedy is quite difficult. Also, I can't watch the live shows because I need to control them. So that is upsetting for me when, you know, this is quite interesting, you and me, sort of the dynamic. But, you know, it's like I like things edited so they're tight. Because I don't like people being lost or playing about. I need to save people. So, yes, it's difficult to watch oneself playing about. Please edit me.
I mean, I think, you know, there's going to be no editing. I think, you know, but you would be terrific. I'll suggest you to Alex. I've got Alex Horns here. I'll suggest you to Alex. I said he should put Jenny Eclair on the Taskmaster.
I think they
were thinking about her. So,
who has done the stuff, and now clearly anyone can read what I've done in the detail.
Yeah. You'd be fantastic on Taskmaster. I'm going to make it happen, Helen. I've got to see it.
If that was my last act to me, when we now think about, you know, me being old in the autumn of my years, it's like, as a last act, do you know what? that would be a great last act.
Yeah.
I don't need to be on Have I Got News to You for You. That isn't of interest to me. But in case you were going to notify that producer.
I haven't got their ear. I can't get on that. So I haven't got
that. That's not bad. Well, you should. You're brilliant. But I mean, that isn't for me. That is a path that they take oddities and they've got their main people. But this kind of eccentric older woman is not fitting for that stadium platform. And good luck. But the Taskmaster, yeah, that would be like, yeah, I'd be happy if I made that.
See, I think it's having done Taskmaster, I kind of felt the only other program I'd like to do on TV is Would I Lie to You, which I haven't done. Maybe QI, but you'd be good on Would I Lie to You as well. Have you done Would I Lie to You?
No, I haven't. No. But this is a fascinating, and I know that we've covered a lot of ground, but what is interesting about Profile is that when you are promoting a book, as I am now, there are certain do's and don'ts, and like to get on those those cookery programs where you have to sit with the chef,
yeah.
And then you have to look at, you go, oh, you're putting oil on your lamb chop. That's interesting. Do you do that a lot? And then they segue back and forth to chef. My profile isn't right for that. So whatever I've done in the 40 years, it is not appropriate to be a guest on a cookery thing in the morning where you then promote your book at the end. So my profile is not of that nature. But doing these podcasts, did Loose Ends, that was fun.
Yeah, that's good.
You done that?
I'm doing it this week, actually. I'm doing
Do it before Clive goes on tour. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. But, I mean, that was quite nerve-wracking, Richard, because you're sitting around a table and then I was last.
Right.
And then you you know that you want to pick up other people, but you mustn't interrupt them. So by the time it came to me, I just went into another planet. And I don't know what I said. Just something happened. Like I was okay. But
yeah.
It's a risk, isn't it?
It is a risk. But, you know, I think people have to take the chance with Helen and they get the gold and they'll get some other stuff around the gold that's interesting in a different way. I think it's great you've written this book. I don't think you should feel anything. If anyone's telling you you should feel ashamed, they're very wrong. Yes. You should be very proud of it.
I go around bluffing now. Yeah.
I think it really is interesting. I listened to the audio book, which you do yourself, which is terrific as well. And, you know, I think there's more. I'd like to hear much more about the 80s stuff. I think you could definitely. I mean, you have written other books as well before, obviously.
Novel,
and I did want to talk to you about you set up the women in comedy.
Comedy Women in Print. Thank you,
yes,
Richard.
Right, yes.
Yeah, Grip. And so that was about 6 years of work, and then we are going to go again now in 2025. So
Great. That
was a very different kind of job, passion project, as we say. We all do those things. But so the winner of the completely unpublished prize becomes published. So it's a meaningful prize.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth applying. In other words, not just like £10 or a token or some makeup. It's like a proper prize. And then also picking up established witty women writers. So, I mean, it's like I'm a nice person, which I'm not always, but I am quite pleased to have done that because there's worse things to have done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's crazy that there needs to be a prize for that, but there does need to, you know, there is a need and it's really important to promote and encourage people to attempt these things.
Yeah.
I think, you know, more so in the modern world, it's kind of got crazy that you've got to be quite well off and, you know, hopefully to make it in entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah, all the people who can go, and there's nothing wrong with that either. But the thought, always the thinking behind, and maybe from doing stand up, from being out there with audiences, it's a broad church. It's a platform's got to go out there. It's not just a kind of genteel opportunity for those people who've been on the Curtis Brown writing course. And good luck to those people who have. It's wider. The comedy can come in different genres if they're written by women and men.
Yeah. I have to say, you've got one of the... I mean, I know women got some bad heckles back in the day, but the heckle... The traditional heckle was, let's see your tits to female comedians or show us your tits. Your heckle that you got that you talk about in the book was, let's see your clit, which...
Yes.
which was is a pretty full on heckle.
I had to ask them to repeat because I wasn't familiar with the. You know, if you're not expect, it's you know, like you didn't quite. I'm so sorry. You want to see my what? And that was yeah, that was that did affect me slightly, but. Yeah, but those times, I think people, I'm not protecting the audience member, but they just were, they just thought it was fair game. You go, why is a woman with a sort of woolen singlet, why is she on stage? What's going on? Oh, I'll ask her that. You know, that would be a normal question. It was.
I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, like, also, you know, quite impractical as well to achieve.
No.
So, I don't know if he'd really thought it through, but I think it sort of show, you know, that shows. I mean, in the 90s, it was, you were getting stuff, but in the 80s, you were getting that. So, you know, comedy is moving on to some extent, not entirely.
You wouldn't get that now, would you, no. Richard?
I mean, you would absolutely would not. I would hope not. You know, you might occasionally get a raucous night, but I don't think you get anything like that. And if you did, that person would be taken out of the room and probably beaten up. So, I think, you know, you've got to
it's
understand. Yeah, but I think the stuff that you know, there was such a small amount of female comedians doing it when you were doing it, and the stuff that you all went through, and the advances you made, and for a lot of you, I don't think, you know, as I say, the credit or the rewards weren't as great as they should be. But I think, you know, it really things really have changed. That there, you know, I've seen panel shows where there have been four women on the panel rather than one woman on the panel. Really? So mainly on the radio, to be fair. But there, you know, it would now be weird not to have, you know,
that's framing it properly. Yeah, that there was that thing where I was asked on Newsnight to talk about why there weren't more women panelists on panel games, and then I got really excited and got ready to do it, and then the guy phoned up and said, sorry, you've been cancelled. I said, why? They said, they've got Maureen Lipman. I said, why? Is she kidnapped? They said, no, we've got too many women. I thought, you've got too many women talking about why that, you know, all that. But my ego was so flattered to suddenly go, oh my God, I can be theoretical about this on Newsnight. Because I think maybe this book is my version of that. It's just a little window where, but with humour, hopefully.
Yeah.
I've just wanted to have a little go at looking at it. That's it.
You know? Well, that's the winner. I think that is where writing books, if you can get published, is almost the last place where you're completely, you know, you have a control over it. I mean, you're working with an editor, obviously, but you can say exactly what you want and in your own terms. And I think the success of this book is that it's absolutely you. And I love reading comedians' autobiographies when they're hiding stuff or when they are unable to see. You know, they sort of dob themselves in. They don't have self awareness. But I think you're self aware enough. You're vulnerable in it, which I think's a terrific thing to be in as a comedian and as a writer. And you know, there's no way for one to completely know why your life or your career has gone the way it has. I feel like a lot of it is just happenstance. I think the thing to overcome is. Mm. Is that feeling that there's some reason you've done something? I mean, no, we probably both have done something.
I have done a few, but you know, you do look back at how many people I've pissed off. Probably three. It's not too many.
Yeah,
but we all who could do it perfectly? So I've loved this. This is like talking to a colleague.
Good.
I don't know many colleagues, you know, so. A colleague is, that's good, isn't it?
It is good. And I think that's interesting as well, Helen. I think, you know, I think a lot of the success stories in comedy come from feeling like you're in a gang. I think like I was in a gang to begin with, and then it sort of fell apart a bit. But, and you know, I think a lot of times if you just have that confidence feeling you're in a gang. And I feel like you were, you know, from this book, you were almost in the gangs, you were in a few, but you were never in like, solidly in there, and I think that's a weird place to be. But that meant it meant you could go between different places, obviously, and getting the absolutely fabulous job, and it was a lovely, absolutely, you know, dream of a part, and a show-stopping part, and in one of the most famous sitcoms of the
I didn't realise at the time, but looking back and then realising how many people adore that programme and how many people have been made happy by that, and realising how it sort of chimed the moment on so many levels. So that was a lovely thing to be part of, but not part of the gang.
No, but still, you know, you were in the Young Ones. Like, you know, I can't beat that. You're in Bottom. You're in Absolute Fabulous. You're in Naked Video. You've done films. You've done theatre. You've written books. So, you know, it's an amazing career, and I'm sure it will continue.
Well, I'm going to
text Alex Horn now. You'll be in Taskmaster. It might be 3 or 4 years.
I'll hang on.
Okay.
In the autumn of my years, that will be my act.
All right. Well, look, we're nearly done, but I ask all my guests if they're reading anything they'd like to recommend. And obviously, you're a bit of a reader for sure. Is there anything you've been reading that you'd like to recommend?
Okay. This one is quite good. I've got this here. It probably won't be normal for your listeners. George Mike's English Humour for Beginners.
Okay.
If you want to succeed here, you must be able to handle the English sense of humour. Oh, my God, it sounds like... No, I just made that up. That sounds like he's a Brexiteer. No. I know. Nina Stibbe, Reasons to be Cheerful.
Okay, yes, good.
We'll put that one in.
Okay, thank you very much. Look, Helen, it's...
Not the Brexit one, sorry.
No, okay. It's good to have a choice for exactly. whatever your political persuasions. Look, it's lovely to talk to you again, and thank you for talking to me outside the Fringe office in 1987, very briefly. and I've seen you since then as well. Not that I'm bitter, it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, it'll make you a bit sad if you're an empathetic person, but also will make you laugh. Very, you know, just beautifully honest, Helen, and beautifully Helen Lederer is all I can say about it.
Oh, wow. Thank you,
thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and I hope to see you again.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.